Washington condemns Moscow's bombing of a children's hospital in Ukraine. Meanwhile, the European Union slaps a new round of sanctions on both Russia and Belarus. The Philippines' labor chief orders a review on minimum wage amid the spike in fuel prices. We'll get the side of both the workers and the employers later on in the program. And the Philippines' health chief hints at further easing restrictions as the country's COVID-19 figures continue to improve. Hi, I'm Carnita Ponce. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Grim news out of Ukraine. A Russian airstrike hit a children's hospital in the city of Mariupol. Patients, including women in labor, trapped under the rubble. The White House calls Moscow's move barbaric. Here's the full story.
Ukraine on Wednesday said a Russian airstrike badly damaged a children's hospital in the besieged city of Mariupol, burying patients under rubble and injuring women in labor. Video shot by the Ukraine military of what appeared to be the badly damaged children's and maternity hospital showed the wreckage of a three-story building. Piles of rubble and burnt-out cars were seen smoldering outside, and wounded people were carried from the destruction. Video posted on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's Instagram account showed the hospital interior piled with debris from broken windows, walls, and equipment. The bombing, which Zelensky called an atrocity, took place despite an agreed ceasefire to enable thousands of civilians trapped in the city to escape. The Kremlin denies targeting civilians. The White House condemned the assault. Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
It is horrifying to see the type of the barbaric use of military force to go after innocent civilians in a sovereign country.
Ukraine said 67 children across the country had been killed since the invasion, and more than 1,000 civilians had died in Mariupol. It was not possible to independently verify the figures. More than 2 million people have fled Ukraine since Russian President Vladimir Putin launched the invasion on February 24th. Ukraine continues to call for allies to imply a no-fly zone, but NATO has declined that request, fearing it could escalate the war. And on Wednesday, the Pentagon closed the door on Poland's proposal to put its MiG-29 fighter jets at the disposal of a U.S. military base in Germany in response to Ukraine's call for fighter jets. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said the plan was not tenable.
The intelligence community has assessed that the transfer of MiG-29s to Ukraine may be mistaken as escalatory and could result in a significant Russian reaction that might increase the prospects of a military escalation with NATO.
Moscow says its demands, including that Kyiv takes a neutral position and drops aspirations of joining the NATO alliance, must be met for it to end its assault.
Ukraine's capital now encircled by Russian forces, but the governor of the Kyiv region vows to fight to the death before allowing Russian forces to take their homeland. We have this report.
New recruits to Ukraine's territorial defense forces in Kyiv got a lesson on Wednesday in newly arrived weaponry meant to punch a hole through a Russian tank. And this instructor, who only gave his name as Alex, told Reuters these men were ready to welcome the Russian army when it tries to take the city.
Russians can enter Kyiv, but they're not going to leave it. They're all going to burn up here.
Many expected Kyiv to quickly fall in the early days of the war. But 2 weeks into the Russian invasion, which Moscow calls a special military operation, Moscow's military missteps and tenacious Ukrainian resistance has kept the capital from changing hands.
Of course, we understand and see that the enemy wants to seize Kyiv. We understand that very well.
Oleksiy Kuleba is the governor of the Kyiv region.
Of course, they were not able to seize Kyiv immediately. Their aim was to do so in 2 or 3 days. This is a well-known fact. They failed because of the heroic actions of our armed forces and ordinary people who stood up to defend our city, our country.
He spoke to Reuters about the struggle ahead in almost apocalyptic terms.
For us, this is Judgment Day. It is a struggle between good and evil. And either way, we would die, but we would not let them seize our city.
Sounds and symbols of Ukrainian resolve spring up around the city. On Wednesday, the remaining musicians of the Kyiv Classic Symphony Orchestra performed the Ukrainian and European Union anthems. The show was broadcast live on Ukrainian TV. The conductor called the concert an action for peace. That is the message here. Praying for peace.
Слава Україні!
Героям слава!
Preparing for battle.
The U.S. House of Representatives approves a massive aid package for Ukraine. The House voted to pass a $1.5 trillion bill that will fund the federal government through September 30th. Included in that legislation is a $13.6 billion aid for the war-torn nation. The bill has been sent for approval to the Senate. Congress must pass the bill by Friday to prevent a government shutdown. It will then be sent for President Joe Biden's signature. The International Monetary Fund grants Ukraine $1.4 billion in emergency financing. The IMF says the package provides critical support needed to cope with the massive humanitarian and economic crisis caused by Russia's invasion. The funds come on top of the $700 million disbursed to Ukraine by the IMF last December and the $2.7 billion Ukraine received as part of an allocation by the IMF last August. On Monday, the World Bank also approved a $723 million package of loans and grants for Kyiv. The European Union announces fresh sanctions against Russia and its ally Belarus as the Russian invasion enters its 14th day. The latest round targets 160 individuals, including Russian lawmakers and oligarchs. Among them, the head of Russia's national carrier, Aeroflot. The Eurobloc also prohibited transactions with the Central Bank of Belarus and excluded three Belarusian lenders from the SWIFT banking system. Britain and the U.S. also expected to announce new sanctions. More companies stepping back from Russia as pressure mounts to take a stand against their invasion of Ukraine. Nestle, the world's largest packaged foods group, is halting investments in Russia. Cigarette maker Philip Morris also says it will scale down its manufacturing in Russia and suspend all investments there. Meanwhile, Sony, whose movie studio has already stopped releases in Russia, says its PlayStation gaming unit will stop shipments and operations in the country. Hilton Worldwide Holdings and Hyatt Hotels also suspending their developments in Moscow. And Yum Brands, the parent firm of fried chicken giant KFC, says they're also pausing investments in Russia. Russians living overseas are left scrambling to find cash as the unprecedented sanctions take a bite out of Moscow. We have this report.
When Konstantin Ivanov tried to withdraw money from his Russian bank account at a cash machine in Bali, he quickly realized the transaction was blocked. The 27-year-old is one of the Russians abroad feeling the squeeze from economic sanctions, despite living far away from home.
This has created a huge problem for us. Basically, going to shops to buy products, to pay at the markets, paying for staying at hotels, villas or guest houses, we have been left completely stripped of our finances. It's like they have been completely frozen and we cannot use our finances at all over here.
Они как просто заморожены, и мы не можем ими воспользоваться здесь.
Bali is a popular holiday destination with Russian tourists. More than 1,100 entered Indonesia in January, according to data from the Statistics Bureau. Rifki Saldianto is a cafe manager. He says there's been a decline in Russian customers in recent days, and many now pay with cash instead of credit card. MasterCard and Visa have suspended services in Russia, and many of the country's banks have been shut out of international payment systems. Now, some Russians have sought to open bank accounts in Indonesia, like Ruslan. He says the Russian community is banding together to help each other out.
I heard from my Russian friends about their financial troubles. But you know how it is with us Russians. We help each other. I have a local bank account, and I will help my friends, as they helped me too, with their money. I will send my money to their bank. And so we Russians will help each other, as we are now the only ones left. We have no one else to help but ourselves.
Despite the financial troubles, Konstantin is hopeful for a peaceful resolution to the conflict.
I think ordinary Russian people are very disappointed with the recent events and developments. Absolutely no one needs a war. People of our country do not need a war, and neither do the people of Ukraine. Nobody wanted this war. We are really worried. Nobody wants war. We all need peace.
Война никому не нужна, всем мир.
The International Energy Agency says they're ready to bring more oil into the market. Members of the IEA agreed to release 60 million barrels of oil reserves to compensate for supply disruptions that may be caused by the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
This was an initial response. It is only 4% of our stocks. If there is a need, if our government decides so, we can bring more oil to the markets as one part of the response. We are discussing with the producing countries in Middle East, in Latin America, in Asia, to encourage them to bring more oil to the markets to compensate the loss of Russian oil on a daily basis.
The United Arab Emirates also says they'll be pumping more oil into the market, but a Philippine oil importer says other suppliers are sending mixed signals.
While you have OPEC members saying that they will increase supply into the market, you've got somebody sending mixed signals, China for that matter, which is a dominant supplier in the region, saying that they will withhold exports. So for the Philippines, a significant amount of our exports come from China. So that's where the pinch happens.
Another huge fuel price hike looms next week. An oil industry source tells ABS-CBN News trading at the mean of Platts, Singapore shows the average price spike at over 12 pesos for diesel and 8 pesos for gasoline. But the estimated price adjustment can still change depending on trading in the next 2 days. Meanwhile, at least one fuel retailer is going against the trend. Petrogas is rolling back its pump prices beginning today until March 13. Petrogas says it wants to help minimize the impact of rising fuel prices on consumers. At least one local transport group has put off its petition for a 1 peso fare hike. That's after government pledged to double the planned 2.5 billion peso fuel subsidy for public transport workers affected by rising pump prices. Pasang Mazda President Obed Martin says jeepney drivers will now be able to receive 13,000 pesos each starting this weekend or early next week.
Kanya kami pumayag dito na mati-parking muna namin ang aming division dahil ang mga traditional na jeep ay ipina-include na rin si Secretary Artugadi dito sa service contracting, yung free rides that will start by next week or the other week.
Meanwhile, Fisher Folk Group Pamalakaya says some fishermen have been forced to drop their trade and look for other jobs as around 80% of their income goes to their fuel needs. The group is calling on government to junk the oil deregulation law.
Kailangan nang ibasura yung oil deregulation law. Kailangan talaga ng produktong petrolyo ay nasa control, no, ng gobyerno para matiyak natin ng serbisyo nito. Ay tuloy-tuloy na serbisyo, hindi tubo, yung interest kapag gobyerno. Kailangan lang maayos, no, na pamamaraan pagpapalakad.
Philippine Labor Chief Silvestre Bello III orders a review of minimum wages as fuel prices rise. Bello says the spike in crude prices are compelling grounds for wage boards to recommend adjustments in the salaries of workers. He points out the current daily minimum wage in Metro Manila of 537 pesos may no longer cover the prices of basic commodities. The budget department, meanwhile, says government should wait for at least 2 weeks before deciding on the matter.
Intindihan ko kung saan sila nanggagaling no, dahil talagang kumonti yung kumbaga purchasing power nila. Pero siguro eh baka pwedeng mag-antay pa ng konti bago magkaroon ng increase ng sweldo. Kasi meron silang theory diyan. Pag tinaasan mo ang sweldo, automatic magsisitaas din yung pati yung lahat ng cost ng bilihin. Dahil yung mga nagtatrabaho na yan sa mga pabrika, no, ibig sabihin tataas din ang cost ng production ng goods mo. So meron silang tinatawag na wage spike, eh, yung ganon. Pag pag tumaas yung ano mo, yung sweldo, input yan in production.
For a reaction, we'll now speak with Alan Tanhusay. He is the spokesperson of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines. Alan, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today. Good afternoon po. Sorry, Alan, can you unmute yourself? Sorry to do that. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right. So first of all, I want to get your reaction to this directive coming from the Labor Secretary himself that the regional tripartite wages and productivity board should now review the minimum wages. Your thoughts on that first?
That should have been done a long time ago because wages in all throughout 17 regions in the country have been stagnant. While they are stagnant, it means there has been no increase for more than 2 years now. And there are regions that some regions, in fact, there have been 3 years that they have not been raised. No? The wages have not been raised during that period. And so we are not trying to address that by preparing a wage petition. So, inahanda na namin kung magkano yung wage rate na pwede namin i-file at kung kailan kami pwede mag-file.
Mm-hmm. And because sinabi mo na nga, Alan, that the wage rates have been stagnant for about 2 years now, nasaan ba dapat ngayon? Kahit wala itong crisis na nangyayari, kahit wala itong pandemic, kahit wala itong crisis sa Ukraine, where should the wages be at this point? Anong level?
Well, siguro nasa 800 to 850 na dapat yung ating minimum wage rate, especially dito sa Metro Manila. Yun ang figure na aming in-estimate kung pag-uusapan natin yung kasalukuyan.
So kapag, but even if you factor in the crisis now in Ukraine, do you think that whatever adjustment that they will make would still be amenable to you, even if it falls below 800, for example, or maybe even 750?
Depende yan, Carmina, sa wage boards. No? The TUCP will file kung magkano yung dapat maibigay sa isang manggagawa at kanyang pamilya. No? We are thinking about yung productivity ng manggagawa, yung nutrition ng pamilya, yung kanilang nutritional need as a family. So kailangan magiging malusog yung manggagawa at the same time malusog yung kanyang mga anak sa kanilang pag-aaral. Kasi kung less nutritional yung mga pagkain nila, eh apektado yung kanilang state of mind at apektado yung productivity ng mga magagawa, especially.
We heard from a government official just a while ago, bago pa namin kayo pinasok sa ere, at ang sinabi po niya, kailangan maghintay. Maybe give it 2 weeks because merong sinasabing wage spike. Pag tinaas ang sweldo ng mga manggagawa, apektado po ang lahat. Yan po ang sinasabi nila. What are your thoughts regarding that?
Posible din siguro, pwedeng maghintay naman ng 2 weeks, pero sa amin, ang tinitingnan namin dito ay yung clamor of the workers to raise the wages. And that clamor has begun since last year.
Are you even confident that the review, even if it happens now, will yield positive results? And are you even confident that the resolution of this will happen even before this administration or the president ceases to or decides to or will step down come June of this year. Kasi ang pinag-uusapan po dito, okay, nag-order ng review. Of course, you're waiting for favorable results regarding that. But will it happen within this time frame? What do you think?
The Secretary of Labor has got into public saying it. So meron ng open order for the wage board to do so, to review the wage rate. But, you know, Carmina, extraordinary event happened, meaning extraordinary increase in prices since last year happened. No, nagsimula yung increases in prices of commodities since October. Binigyan, nag-grant ang gobyerno to allow businesses to raise the prices of basic goods. So, tumaas ang LPG, patuloy na pagtaas yung mga gasolina. Dapat merong motu proprio since last year ang wage board. Hindi na kinakailangan ng order from the Secretary of Labor to review the wage rate. Dapat meron silang motu proprio o voluntariness on their part because they have that mandate in the law na kapag kami mga extraordinary events o increases in prices of basic goods na apektado sa mga manggagawa, dapat meron ng ano, meron ng kusa ang wage board. But walang kusa from the wage board. At napilitan ang Secretary of Labor to order a review, no, and napilitan ng mga labor groups to make a noise, no, to create pressure for this to happen.
So what do you think should be, kasi pag when they do conduct the wage review, it shouldn't be now based upon the extraordinary events that happened last year. That should have been, what should, do you think that should be factored in now and then just really focus on the extraordinary events that are happening right now as we speak? And we're talking about, of course, the crisis in Ukraine.
Carmina, ang nakalagay sa batas ng RA 6727 o yung minimum wage law in the Philippines, ang sinasabi doon, dapat pag magbibigay ng wage o ng wage increase ng mga wage board, kinoconsider nila yung nangyari nung nakaraan, yung nangyari sa kasalukuyan, at yung nangyari in the future, yung mangyayari in the future, meaning yung forthcoming increases in prices of commodities for 1 year, no? Yun ang kanilang mandate.
And of course, and in a few minutes, we're going to be hearing from the Employers Confederation of the Philippines. We do know that the economy is reeling still because of the COVID crisis. And if the wages are raised, how do you think that's going to impact on the recovery efforts of the economy as we speak?
Yes, ma'am. Yan po kasalukuyang sitwasyon ng TUCP ngayon. Huh? This is the first time mayroon tayong pandemic whereas apektado manggagawa at apektado din ang mga businesses at mga enterprises. So kami ngayon, tinitingnan namin kung ano ba yung pwedeng gawin immediate solution to this issue. Ang tinitingnan namin, baka pwede kami mag-file in some regions na apektado ng pandemic at apektado ng UDET. No? Baka doon hindi tayo maaring mag-file ng wage increase petition. Baka doon naman sa ibang mga regions na hindi naman ganun kalala, baka doon tayo pwede mag-file ng wage increase petition. No? So tinitingnan namin ito. Maari ding tinitingnan namin na this time we will involve the government, no, in helping out. No? Apektado manggagawa, apektado ang mga businesses. So tinitingnan namin baka pwedeng magbigay ng mga tax incentives ang gobyerno sa mga small and micro, hindi kakayanin yung wage order o yung wage increase na bibigay ng wage board. Maaring magbigay ng pautang ng walang interest ang gobyerno. O kaya, pwede rin magbigay ng mga cash subsidies ang gobyerno directly to the workers, especially dun sa mga regions na lubhang apektado ng UDET at ng pandemic crisis.
So you are open to exploring other avenues, exploring other ways to alleviate the situation and not just at the possibility of raising of wages. While I have you here, Alan, I want to talk to you about the TUCP endorsing presidential bet Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Has that been formalized?
Yes, it has been formalized. We came up with the press statement about it, and there was some series of meetings with Mr. Marcos and Ms. Sara Duterte, and there has been some technical working group created to discuss the labor agenda if ever Mr. Marcos or Ms. Sara Duterte would emerge as a winner.
How do you reconcile this endorsement, Mr. Tanhusay, with the history that the labor sector had under the Marcos dictatorship, where employment was high, where labor was cheap, where labor activists either disappeared or were even murdered?
Well, that was all those happened during the old Marcos, the late President Marcos. So we are optimistic that Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. would not do the same mishaps as the father did.
And this optimism is based on?
Based on his commitment to engage the TUCP with the TUCP's labor agenda, and we have submitted, in fact, to Mr. Marcos 8 executive labor agenda and 8 legislative agenda, which is not the subject of a technical working group. Kung ano yung pwedeng maidagdag pa doon at kung ano yung pwedeng magawa as soon as possible. Ano yung pwedeng magawa in the short term and the midterm and in the long term.
And what makes you think that he, among all the candidates, will be able to deliver on the labor agenda that you submitted?
Hindi lang naman kay Mr. Marcos kami, hindi lahat tayo hindi naman nakakasiguro sa mga kandidato, no? Hindi lamang kay Mr. Marcos, kundi sa ibang kandidato rin, no? Wala rin naman tayong kasiguruhan kung halimbawa ay si Mr. Moreno o si Mr. Lacson o si Ms. Robredo mananalo. We are not sure kung talagang susundin nila yung labor agenda na sa aming palagay ay dapat i-prioritize ng susunod na administrasyon.
Mm-mm. I get that. Pero bakit po si Marcos Jr. ang napusuan ng TUCP? Even if you're not sure about, you know, what he's going to do with it.
Yung pong choice na yun ay isang produkto ng union members ng TUCP, no? Since October last year, nagsagawa na kami ng mga series of caucuses, union meetings. At sa isang part ng mga union meetings namin doon ay naglaan kami ng panahon para tanungin ang mga union members namin, ang mga member namin, kung sino ang kanilang napupusuan na magiging o iboboto itong susunod na eleksyon. So yun ang lumalabas na sentimiento ng aming mga miyembro.
And how did they explain this sentiment? Ano po yung nag-ujok? Ano po ang basehan nila kung bakit ganito po ang sentimiento nila? Because we do want to understand where they're coming from as well.
Simple lang ang pagkakasabi nila sa amin, ang nagustuhan nila ay yung effort at yung agenda ni Mr. Marcos at Ms. Duterte na dapat united ang ating bansa sa pag-ahon mula dito sa pandemic, economic, and health crisis.
Mm-mm. And how do you think that unity will affect them? How did they think that that unity will affect them?
Siguro kasi sawa na rin sila sa mga bashing, sa mga awayan, sa mga paninira, sa... hindi nakakatulong para sa kanila yung ganitong klaseng mga government officials na nagbabangayan. Siguro ang mas importante sa kanila ngayon ang ano ang plano, ano yung agenda at ano yung gagawin ng susunod na administrasyon para sa kanila?
At para sa kanila, klaro yon na naipapahiwatig ng kampo po ni Marcos Jr. sa kanila.
Yes, marahil ganon.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Alan Tanhusay, spokesperson of the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines. We appreciate you coming to the show and talking to us today. Maraming salamat po. Ingat po.
Thank you, Carmina. Magandang hapon.
Right. Let's now get the side of the employers. Joining us now is Sergio Ortiz. Here he is, of course, the president of the Employers Confederation of the Philippines. Mr. Ortiz Luis, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I thought you were joining us on Zoom. You're joining us now via phone. So we just spoke with Alan Tanhusay of TUCP, and he did say, you know, there are other ways. They're not just looking at increasing the minimum wage. They're going to look at areas specifically and see if these areas must raise their wages. But they're also looking at other avenues. I want to get your thoughts first on the directive of the Labor Secretary, the directive to review the minimum wage.
Well, the directive actually is basically because there is a rule that the filing of a minimum wage can be only after 1 year of the filing now. So in effect, the Secretary is just saying there is a compelling reason, extraordinary circumstance, where all these filings will be accepted and deliberated on, and that the wage boards, the different regional wage boards, should start when they receive. There is nothing to deliberate on unless there are filings, and you can see that the big labor organizations are very about this. They are really looking at the situation. They have not decided what they are going to file because I think we are with them that the situation is fluid and there are realities that they have to consider. And at the end of the day, I think both of us agree that that the government has to intervene somehow. No? In the deliberation of the minimum wage, normally in the past, we'd always object whenever there is a deliberation, but there is a clear showing that there is going to be some review. But there are realities, and that is what we would like to say.
The realities that you speak of, Mr. Ortiz-Luis, is that number one, the economy is still reeling from the COVID crisis. And then, of course, you have the Ukraine crisis just really pushing up the prices of basic commodities, really, when you do raise the price of fuel. So that's the reality that we're in right now.
Among others, I'm going to talk of some other realities that people should know that when deliberation is held, these are the things. One, there are about 44 million in the labor market, people in the labor market. No? And this divided into the formal and informal sector. The formal sector is the one that are in the DOLES list, in Pagibig, in SSS, and whatever. The other, these are only 16% of the employment market. The other 84% really, who are they? They have no employer. They are taxi, maybe tricycle drivers, market vendors, farmers, small business, family business. This comprises 84%. So when there is a movement in the minimum wage, the 16% is the one that is targeted, and not all of them are minimum wage earners. Perhaps the one that will be affected, including those who will be affected because of the distortion in salaries, would be about 10%. Of the 44 million. So remember that when you move the 10% of the on the minimum wage, their employer will raise prices to cover them, and that will that is cascade to the selling price of the and might be might raise prices now at the detriment of the other 84% who have who will not receive any increases. The other reality is that 90% of our enterprises are micro. 8% are small, 1% is medium, and 1% is large.
Right.
The micro employs 65% of the workers, and during this pandemic, 50% have closed down already. We're trying to encourage them to go back. So these are the ones that will be affected by a minimum wage increase. And therefore, this will come out in deliberation. And the other thing that you have to probably consider is that there is a misnomer that the minimum wage and the living wage are the same. No, it's not. Minimum wage in the parlance of the International Labor Organization is an entry-level wage. The targeted protection is really intended for fresh graduates, new entrants to the labor market. But it's not meant to provide subsistence for the four or five members of the family. Living wage includes a lot of other things. Like, for instance, if there is another one who is an earner in the family, if the wife is selling something, as income, other sources of income of the family, assistance from the government in health, in education. These are all factored in to be the living wage. So there is a misnomer when they say, well, how can a family of five subsist in the minimum wage? It's not intended to be that way. So those are the things that will be considered. We are not saying that we're against any deliberation. We are with the labor sector this time. We have very good cooperation with them. We talk regularly, and that is why you will notice, even now, they have not really filed. There were filings in some region, like in Clabarzon, by some groups of labor. I think the metal sector there. Or no. But the big ones are still looking and working and trying to find ways. But at the end of the day, I think there is an agreement between us and them that the big ones maybe can afford, but the micro certainly cannot. They cannot even meet their payroll. 50% are close. So we would like them to retire people.
So both sides, Mr. Ortiz-Luis, both sides obviously now really understanding the predicament of the other. Especially because we're still reeling from this pandemic. There's a light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, the economy is going to start to pick up very, very soon. But what to you, if you were to be asked, what to you is the win-win solution here? Is it just between the labor sector and the employers? Or are you also looking at other ways here to alleviate the plight of both sectors? Because it's not only the employers, it's also not just about the labor sector here. Go ahead.
As a matter of fact, the reason why we would like it to pass through the process of the wage board, you will notice in the constitution of the wage board, one representative from the employers, one representative from the employees, three representatives from the government, NEDA, DTI, and DOLE. We would like them to really sit down, deliberate, and decide what is really a reasonable increase. And they are the ones who can really go turn around, and especially NEDA, and tell the government, look, guys, there is no way these employers can pay this. So if you want to really alleviate their plight, no? Well, for instance, we have to address first the informal sector, the 84%. And they are doing that with the drivers, with the whatever subsidies. But the workers who are earning minimum wage, there should be some alleviation for them also. And the government should find a way. Mm-hmm. And the three representatives there of the government should be in a position to say, look, guys, this is what is coming out. But there is no way these employers can pay it. So what can we do with it? That to us, in the labor sector, is very clear. Mm-hmm. They have to pencil push and try to find out what it is. It's a good thing that we are getting good news now that the price of oil is going down because I think the Middle East is trying to increase their oil. And I think it will still go down when they realize that this war in Ukraine is not going to produce anything good, even for the West of us. So I think at the end of the day, we may have reasonable findings, and at the end of the day, the government will have to decide that they will have to help out in this.
Mr. Sergio Ortiz Luis, Jr., President of the Employers Confederation of the Philippines, nice talking to you today. Thanks for joining
Thank
us.
You
take care.
Out,
and you. Right, we're going to take a break from there. Up ahead, South Korea elects conservative opposition candidate Yoon Suk-yeol as its new president. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back with more news. South Koreans elect conservative opposition candidate Yoon Suk-yeol as their new president. In one of the most closely fought races in recent history, we have this report.
South Korea has a new president. Conservative opposition candidate Yoon Suk-yeol was elected in one of the most closely fought races in recent history, which will shape Asia's fourth largest economy for the next 5 years. Yoon, who is 60, edged out the ruling Democratic Party's Lee Jae-myung by a fraction. A formal announcement is expected to be made on Thursday. The People Power Party candidate said he would work with opposition parties to heal polarized politics and foster national unity, calling the election a, quote, victory of the great people.
승리가 아닌가 그렇게 생각을 합니다.
Yoon's 5-year term will begin this month to replace incumbent President Moon Jae-in, who is constitutionally barred from seeking re-election. The White House congratulated Yoon, saying President Joe Biden looked forward to working closely with him to bolster the alliance. Despite being a political novice, Yoon shot to fame after spearheading high-profile investigations into corruption scandals engulfing Moon's aides.
이제 우리는 이런 부패하고
We have to stop the corrupt and incompetent ruling forces' attempt to extend their term and plunder people.
He has pledged to stamp out graft, foster justice, and create a more level playing field while seeking a reset with China and a tougher stance towards reclusive North Korea. More than 77% of South Korea's 44 million eligible voters cast ballots to pick their next leader, despite an unprecedented surge in new COVID-19 cases, with a record 342,446 posted on Wednesday.
Vice presidential bet, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio campaigns in vote-rich Quezon City. For more on her campaign activities, we're now joined by our correspondent, Ina Reformina. Ina, over to you.
Yes, Case, the unit team vice presidential candidate, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte, has just arrived here at a covered store in a Commonwealth Avenue District 2 here in vote-rich Quezon City, for another meet and greet, this time with Ugnayan's homeowners here in this particular district of the city. Earlier this morning, Duterte had two intimate meet and greet activities. The first with drivers and vendors, as well as members of their family at the Batoda Terminal along IBP Road Corner, Commonwealth Avenue. And she also had another meet and greet with senior citizens and women's groups in Payata, Quezon City. She has a day-long campaign activity here in the city. Later this afternoon, she will be meeting with the LGBTQ plus community, as well as meet barangay officials along Quezon Boulevard. There will be a meeting there. I'm at a hotel in Quezon Boulevard. Now, in her speeches in Payatas and right now here in Commonwealth, as she begins her speech, Duterte stands her front runner presidential bet, Bongbong Marcos, is here campaigning for the entire Unity ticket. She is echoing their job generation program, their focus on agriculture and food security, also mitigating measures to cushion the impact of the rising cost of fuel in the world market, also a priority on quality education, as well as following through on the programs, particularly the build infrastructure programs and peace and order and anti-criminality programs of the Duterte administration. Now, together with her in this particular day-long sorting here in Quezon City is former Quezon City Mayor Herbert Bautista, who is also running as one of the senatorial candidates on the UNITEAM ticket. Also, former Chief Presidential Legal Counsel Salvador Panelo, who is not a member of the UNITEAM senatorial ticket, but who is, of course, an administration ally. Now, Casey, this is the first time that I've heard former Secretary Salvador Panelo openly supporting the presidential bid of Bongbong Marcos. Now, Panelo is saying for three reasons. He is very, and I quote, comfortable and glad that Duterte picked Bongbong Marcos as her running mate. She gave in to Bongbong Marcos because in prior service, she was stopping as a presidential candidate. Now, Panelo said that, number one, Marcos' slogan of national unity is something that he is in support of. Marcos is not engaged in mudslinging. The only presidential candidate, in fact, in Panelo's words, was not engaged in mudslinging and negative propaganda. Number two, Bongbong Marcos has not attacked President Duterte and is, in fact, singing praises for President Duterte's program, such as the Build program, for one. And then number three, Panelo said, because Marcos is saying repeatedly that he will be following through on some of the key and the pillar programs for the Duterte administration. So in at least two speeches here in Quezon City, Panelo has been singing the praises of Marcos. And of course, Sara Duterte also explains to Quezon City voters why she has chosen Bongbong Marcos, and that is because of his experience in Ilocos Norte as local chief executive. He has managerial skills and is, she said, very well trained in responding to emergency situations at the local level, which he can very well apply in the national level. So again, Casey, I'm here in Commonwealth Avenue. Daily activities for vice presidential candidate Sara Duterte, who is greeted by local officials here and those running for various local posts here in Quezon City in Halalan 2022. That is the latest from Quezon City. Casey, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Ina. Take care and you keep safe. Presidential bet, Senator Panfilo Ping Lacson is in Parañaque City, where he was welcomed by Mayor Edwin Olivares. Our very own Sandro Ochona now joins us with details. Sandro?
Yes, Carmina, presidential candidate Senator Panfilo Lacson is insisting that members of CPP NPA NDF were present during another presidential candidate sortie, VP Lenny Robredo, last week in Cavite. Lacson said this is based on the intelligence he received and is validated by other surrenderees who confirmed being members of the rebel group. Lacson, however, said he still needs further validation if in other rallies held by Robredo were also infiltrated. He also warns of a possible government coalition if Robredo wins, as this would put to waste the gains of the current administration against armed struggle. Lacson also said that the NPA may be forming a coalition should Robredo win, as the rebel group is waning its powers. He again maintains this is not red tagging. Lacson is in Parañaque City to talk with some of its residents and have dropped by the city hall and met with Mayor Edwin Olivares. Olivares, who is a member of another political party, PDP Laban, said Lacson is qualified and that they are considering endorsing Lacson in their party. Lacson, on his part, said that he is there not to seek endorsement but to simply pay courtesy to the mayor. Lacson also emphasized the need for a special session in Congress for proper implementation on the subsidy for tricycle drivers, as mentioned in the 2022 national budget. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Zandro Ochona there joining us on the line. Zandro, take care and you keep safe. In other news, the Philippines kicks off the fourth round of its national vaccination days. Our correspondent Vivian Gulia now joins us with an update. Viv, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. More than 100 individuals lined up this morning to get a COVID jab here at the Philippine Medical Association office in Quezon City on the fourth day of the national COVID vaccination drive, round four. But this figure is so far from the site's capacity of administering 1,000 COVID jabs. It accepts walk-ins who are eligible for a first dose, second dose, or a booster shot. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III cautions the public against complacency, which he sees as among the reasons for the low uptake of COVID booster shots and the recent slowdown in COVID vaccination in the country. But he reminds them that depending on possible virus mutations, a COVID surge remains within the realm of future possibilities. That is why Duque says, or appeals to the public, to get vaccinated or boosted if eligible. He issued a statement during the ceremonial vaccination for the NVD4, which targets to jab 1.8 million individuals ages 12 years old and above in 3 days. Unlike previous rounds, when vaccinations during the NVD were primarily held in mega jabbing sites, the government this time has shifted its strategy to bring the inoculation closer to the public through clinics, workplaces, and house-to-house initiatives. But COVID vaccination in schools, malls, and gymnasiums still continue. Duque says COVID vaccination should be free, even when done in clinics and workplaces. The country has fully vaccinated close to 64 million individuals, or 71% of the eligible population, while nearly 10.7 million received a booster or additional dose. Of the 233.8 million COVID jabs that arrived in the country, over 90 million have yet to be administered. Duque says vaccine maker AstraZeneca has extended the shelf life of 12 to 13 million of its remaining COVID jabs in the country by another 3 months. The Philippines will donate a portion of these. Duque has yet to disclose how many doses will be donated, but among the countries being eyed to receive it are Cambodia, Myanmar, and some countries in Africa. He notes that most of the vaccines to be donated are also donations by other countries through the COVAX facility. Duque explains the country received around 75 million doses from COVAX, more than the earlier committed doses of 40 million COVID jabs. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Viv. Take care and you keep safe. Before we go, ABS-CBN's entertainment website Push embraces digital technology for the 2021 Push Awards for the first time. Winners are awarded with special digital trophies in the form of non-fungible tokens or NFTs. Push Awards shifted to NFTs as trophies to keep up with its goal of recognizing personalities who have made their mark in the digital space. Breakout love team Donnie Pangilinan and Belle Mariano and comedian Vice Ganda led the list of winners. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.